SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Now, where to begin?
Welcome back to a new episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit, the show where we talk about the books. Well, the book, actually, there's just one book about The Hobbit, but then, of course, there are many more books written by Tolkien that give us a lot of the background, and we talk about that in our show, like the larger history of Middle-earth at the time of The Hobbit, and then, of course, the most important reason for us to do this show is all the excitement surrounding the production of the two Hobbit movies currently in New Zealand by none other than Peter Jackson, the one who brought us his visual interpretation of The Lord of the Rings and is now back for The Hobbit. And to talk with me about the latest news from New Zealand and from other places in the world and perhaps also news from Middle Earth is, of course, my good friend Dave Kale. Good morning.
Hello, Father. How are you, sir?
I am good and ready to go. We don't have that much news to talk about, but there is a lot of speculation that this news might generate. And, of course, as always, we talk about the little tidbits that have hit the newspapers and the various blogs about the casting. And we had a bit of casting news, hadn't we?
Yes, it's sort of unofficial casting news, but we have news nonetheless. So the let's see. I think the first article was reported in New Zealand. That or maybe it wasn't in New Zealand. Maybe it was in Britain. Well, basically, what happened was Martin Freeman was backstage at the 2011 BAFTA Awards, which is
that's in the UK.
Sort of British UK awards, and he was being honored. He picked up he and other folks from BBC show Sherlock won some awards for best drama and best actor and things
really?
Like that. And so yes, and while he was backstage, he sort of let slip like, my co-star from Sherlock, Benedict Cumberbatch, is going to be joining us on The Hobbit. Peter Jackson has recruited him in. They immediately went and harassed Benedict Cumberbatch, and he said, I have to keep it a secret. I can't tell you anything about which character I'm playing.
Oops.
And Martin Martin Freeman made a comment later. He said, I knew I was a big mouth. I didn't know how much of a big mouth, and I've ruined everything. And now I might not have a job to go back to. And obviously, he's exaggerating. But, I guess he wasn't supposed to let that slip. Or who knows? Maybe this is a whole calculated thing. But, yes, this has started the rumor mill on the web.
And that's what we all like. That we love the rumor mill. So we have to thank Bilbo once more for letting us in on these secrets of The Hobbit. I still have to watch Sherlock, and I'm getting more and more curious. I have to find some time to watch that. Who is Benedict Cumberbatch playing in Sherlock? Do you know that?
He is actually Sherlock.
Oh. No way. Really?
Yes, Benedict Cumberbatch plays Sherlock Holmes, and Martin Freeman plays his accomplice in investigating crimes, John Watson.
Huh. Interesting.
Yes.
So these two know each other very well and are very much used to play together. So that's very promising. Now,
yes.
Of course, the big question is, are they going to benefit from that chemistry that is clearly already there? Otherwise, Sherlock would have not, had the success that it obviously had, winning all these awards at the BAFTA. But what could be his role? Who is he going to be? What's the rumor mill reporting?
That is an excellent, excellent question. Yeah, and your sort of lead-in statement is very apt. Will we benefit from the chemistry between these two actors? The biggest rumor that's been flying around the internet is that he will be doing the voice of Smaug.
Really? Now that would be huge news. but also a bit strange because it's, you know, for people that watch Sherlock, Benedict Cumberbatch might be a well-known actor, but for the rest of the world, and I'm part of the rest of the world, is like, huh? Who is that?
That's right.
You'd think that for Smaug, they would choose a bigger name if they could afford
him. Yeah. Also, I don't know. I'm not sure his voice has the right sort of tonal quality to it that I would expect. Although my mental image of Smaug is heavily influenced and biased by the old cartoons, where he has a really, really deep voice.
Really?
sort of a deep, growly, sort of scratchy voice. But
well, that makes sense. I mean, it's an old dragon, and so it has to have some power, I think. You can't have a little wimpy voice like, oh, I'm Smaug the dragon, and you're a hobbit. I'm going to kill you. That's not going to work.
And Benedict Cumberbatch has a sufficiently baritone voice, but it's, I don't know, it just didn't seem like doesn't fit my image of a dragon voice. But
now,
of course, they
could also change his voice, you know, digitally and add all sorts of frequencies or make it sound lower or whatever. Although, I don't know, you'd think that they go for a character that in real life also has this kind of dragon-like quality. And if you don't think dragon when you see Benedict Cumberbatch as Sherlock Holmes, then why would they cast him for the voice of Smaug? By the way, I looked up the pronunciation for Smaug, and actually, according to most of the sources that I was able to find, it's Smaug and not Smaug. I kind of keep in between the two, like smog, but you can just say Smaug, like wow, and that seems to be the official pronunciation.
Yes, that's true. I believe that is correct. It is indeed Smaug, I often find myself going back and forth too.
I'm still looking for the ultimate source on the pronunciation of Middle Earth names and words, and I have a hard time playing Lord of the Rings online and then talking with other people, other players in the game, because, you know, I might be talking about some city in Angmar, and they're like, what? Where is that? And it turns out I just completely mispronounced it. So we need a good pronunciation guide. I think there's actually some money to be made for someone who could do that, because there's a big, big crowd out there that wants to know. That wants to sound intelligent when talking about Middle Earth.
There's a lot of references on Tolkien's language stuff, but maybe there's not a quick and easy pronunciation guide. I'm shocked there isn't one online. I haven't really looked. Maybe we'll make that a research project.
Well, there are some bits left and right. There are some websites, also some Lord of the Rings online websites that do give you the pronunciation of some of the names. But I just want like one place to go. But anyway, there's a business opportunity there.
I'll see what I can find, Joe.
Ooh, I'm reading the chat room, by the way. Andrew in the chat room has a great suggestion for Smaug. Why not pick Christopher Walken? I think he would be great. Actually, that would be a really, really good choice. he's kind of a, I don't know, he has that quality that Smaug also has in the story, which is kind of, you know, you have to have someone who's really sounds intelligent, has a certain charism, but is also kind of devious and you know, can talk in riddles. I like that.
He would be pretty good.
Although Walken doesn't have a low gravelly voice. But
so going back to Benedict, you know, what's really interesting is I keep reading these articles that say early reports are that he'll be playing Smaug, or rumors are that he's been playing Smaug. And I've been trying to trace the source of these rumors, and I'm not sure there is one. So
well, usually
we
the
could
source
be way off.
Yeah, in this case, the source is probably just another rumor. It's just someone who picked up this news first and started writing. Well, he could be playing Smaug, and then the next blogger says, "Well, according to rumors, he's gonna be Smaug."
That's right.
It's just, you know, who is the first one to report on this sort of stuff. I've seen this kind of rumor repetition and rehashing over and over again in the world of Star Wars when I was still doing my Star Wars website, you know, trying to patch together the story of the prequels, and you'd see this over and over and over again. It's based on one article that was pure speculation. You know, the next person that writes about it, it becomes less speculation and more of a rumor. And then the third, you know, newspaper or magazine is like, oh, it's almost a fact. It's almost as if George Lucas, you know, was announcing this on television. And then, you know, very often it turned out to be totally different from what everybody expected. So there's an interesting study, I think, to be done about the life of rumors and how perhaps even our show might contribute to consolidating some of this rumor stuff. And anyway, I don't mind, actually. I really like the speculation. And it allows, a guy like Peter Jackson to keep some surprise to save some surprises for later on in the process, because
yep,
we might be
true.
totally off the mark with this.
Yes. So don't be surprised if he is not in fact playing Smaug.
If he is not, because we are pretty certain that this casting is a done deal, even though it wasn't announced officially by Peter Jackson. But if he's not going to be Smaug, who else could he be? Are there any other suggestions or rumors or some other speculation?
So there's a really good article over at theonering.net where someone sort of discusses this and says they sort of say the same things too. They say, we don't know if early reports means the writer asks somebody at a desk nearby who is left to be cast, but this seems at best suspicious. So yeah, we're at a position now where most of the major roles in the show have been cast, and so every time a new person is announced, particularly someone with a name, you know, even if they're not Brad Pitt, Benedict Cumberbatch is a relatively big name, at least in the UK.
Wait a minute, Pitt has been cast for The Hobbit? Brad Pitt?
Yeah.
Is Brad Pitt going to voice Smaug? Really? I got a blog
now.
About that. Brad Pitt is Smaug.
Did you hear Secrets of the Hobbit the other day? They said Brad Pitt's in it.
That's awesome. And Angelina Jolie, she's playing an elf? Really?
Yes. Need to start putting that on Twitter right now.
Oh, Lord. What if it's the opposite? What if Brad Pitt is an elf and then Angelina Jolie is actually the dragon?
The dragon, yes.
Is it a male dragon, actually? Do dragons have gender?
Unclear. I
mean, that would be such a surprise if it was actually a female dragon. How cool would that be?
A female player, yes.
That would be awesome.
I'm going to push for that. I think that's a great idea.
That would be really revolutionary, and I think it would surprise everyone.
Yes. That's right.
Wow, Angelina Jolie as Smaug. I think that's excellent. I think we might have stumbled upon something here. So back to the One Ring. The people that you know treat this stuff seriously.
That's right.
What is their take?
Basically, there's not that many big characters left to cast. There's Smaug. There is Bard the Bowman. I'm trying to think. Let's see, going through the, you know, maybe the Goblin King. I'm not sure if he's been cast yet.
That could be a cameo by Peter Jackson, actually.
Yeah,
he needs to have a cameo.
Maybe that'll be his cameo, because he doesn't last too long, the Goblin King. So maybe they'll have Ian McKellen will kill Peter Jackson.
And you know, for some reason, now that we're completely off the rails anyway, Peter Jackson, of course, before he was famous for this movie and or the Lord of the Rings, he used to do these kind of really strange horror movies, and some of that stuff is really unwatchable, at least to me. I don't like that stuff at all. But for some reason, I can totally see him as an orc, like a goblin king. That would totally suit his kind of the other side of Peter Jackson, the kind of horror flick director. Anyway, sorry.
The other sort of major rumor about Benedict Cumberbatch, or I don't know how big it is, but this is what this person writing at theonering.net is saying, is Bard the Bowman, of course. And like I said, they're just going down the list of who hasn't been cast yet.
Sure.
Who could he be playing? It's all right, Smaug and Bard the Bowman.
Bard
all
the
right,
Bowman.
There you go.
Huh. Refresh my memory. Bard the Bowman, that's someone from Lake Town, right?
Yep, he's this grim archer and guard from Lake Town. He's actually a descendant of the royal house in Dale, which is Dale is the town that's right at the foot of the Lonely Mountain that's basically been destroyed and abandoned by its people when Smaug came. And so a lot of the refugees from Dale had moved to Esgaroth, also known as Lake Town, and has sort of integrated with the population there. So Bard is kind of he's a guard and an archer there.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also the descendant of the king of Dale. And so he's the guy that really stands to gain if Smaug is destroyed, because he can go back and take up his realm there. And he's sort of a very grim, very serious, courageous man. And so when the dragon comes out and the people of Lake Town are flipping out, he's the one that sort of takes control and mounts a defense and spoiler alert, if you haven't read the book, he's the one that ultimately kills Smaug.
Yes. In a very strange scene where it's actually, isn't it a bird that tells him where to strike, where the weak spot is that Bilbo discovered?
There's this old thresh that lives up on the mountain, and the people of Dale apparently have this ancient ability to understand the speech of thresh, and the thresh overhears Bilbo recounting to the dwarves what he's learned after he goes into the mountain. And one of the things that he learns is that even though the dragon has a really, really tough hide on top, uh-huh. and it wears a sort of a diamond encrusted waistcoat, as it were, on his belly to protect his sort of soft underbelly, there's a patch on his left breast that's uncovered. And so the thresh hears that and then flies down to Lake Town while Smaug is attacking and tells Bard the Bowman, shoot him in the left breast. And so this guy makes this unbelievable shot and kills Smaug with one arrow.
Cool. I think it's his last arrow, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's like he's almost out of arrows.
It's black arrow. It's this special arrow. It's the last one he's got left, and it's one that he's used before that sort of has never failed him, and that eventually he always manages to recover. So.
Oh, really? Wow. Uh-huh. So it's almost like him getting back at Smaug for everything that Smaug did to his family, probably, and his, the whole, havoc that the dragon caused in the past. That's cool. Yep. I like that.
And and this sets off a whole series of more interesting events later, because the dwarves say, oh, good, Smaug's dead, and we have all our treasure. And these guys come and say, we're the ones that killed the dragon.
Right.
You
it's like,
him up.
Yes.
Turned our town down. We killed him, so we would like some recompense.
Here's the bill.
a lot of the treasure that's in the Lonely Mountain now, it's hard to tell where it came from. So much of it is originally belonged to the dwarves, but a lot of it is stuff Smaug has plundered from other places and brought back there. So,
including perhaps the city of, what was it again? The Dale.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's actually makes sense for them to claim part of the treasure, but then so they confront what's his name the leader Thorin about that, and Thorin is not he doesn't want to negotiate, right? He's a very strong businessman. He's like, no way, that's hard.
And also, it's one of those situations. It's really this is where the book really takes a turn from mm-hmm. being what you might consider a children's book to being a really, really serious and deep book, because they certainly have a case, but at the same time, when they show up to ask for their treasure, now in fairness, they figured that the dwarves are dead, but when they show up to ask for their treasure, they show up with an army. And the dwarves are like, we're not of a mind to bargain with you when you come asking for treasure with an army behind you, because it looks like you're coming to take it from us.
But aren't the dwarves also at one point gathering an army, or at least calling upon their?
As soon as and the elves are there as well. And as soon as Bard and the elves show up with their army, Thorin sends messages to his cousin Dain in the Iron Hills and says, "Bring your army." So. It's one of those situations like – so I just read this book again last week, and reading through this section again, I just sort of started to realize how complicated the situation is. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That nobody's really – everyone has a position that's reasonable, but nobody's really in the right except Bilbo.
And there is not really like an authority that is above all the parties. That's the problem, I think, of Middle-earth. You've got all these different groups, but there is no – well, let's say on the side of the good guys, there's no one really leading the pack. Not yet. There will be later on, perhaps in the form of Aragorn in a way. But right now there isn't, whereas, of course, the dark side has much more leadership.
So, yep, that's right.
There's no one to rule here.
And yeah, there's no authority to mediate this situation or to appeal to. So yeah, that's an excellent point. And it's kind of sad. And that's what you get from Bilbo. He's just like, you know, we just killed the dragon, mm-hmm. and yet here we are going into conflict again, and people are just sort of overcome by their desire for the treasure. And
exactly.
And rather than realizing that there's more than enough treasure for everybody and that they should just cooperate.
It's the same greed that had taken hold of Smaug now takes hold of everyone else. And so you can wonder if the real enemy in the story is not the dragon, but it's actually the treasure itself.
Which
they see as the prize and the reward actually turns out to be a much bigger menace to Middle-earth and to peace than that one dragon that was just sitting on top of that treasure, but, you know, that was about it.
Yep, and it's not until the goblin army comes down upon them that everybody just immediately reorients their priorities and values and says, oh, we've got bigger problems.
Right.
We need to combine forces. And the great thing is that the outcome – even though it's tragic because a lot of people die, including Thorin Oakenshield, mm-hmm. the outcome is highly positive because they say at the end, and then also in The Lord of the Rings, they mention Dain, Thorin's mm-hmm. cousin, who becomes king under the mountain. And they say that Dain is a great and generous king. He gives treasure to both the lake town and some treasure to the elves. He gives Bilbo his treasure, which at one point Thorin had said, you're not getting your treasure now, because Bilbo sort of helps the lake men and the elves. And what you get is, instead of conflict, you see cooperation and strength. The dwarves rebuild the Lonely Mountain, and they help Bard and his descendants rebuild Dale and build a strong kingdom there. And they also help rebuild Lake Town. And there's good relationship between the dwarves, the men, and the elves. And what you get is, by the time the War of the Ring rolls around, you have a really, really strong force for good in the north at Lonely Mountain. And Sauron is forced to send some of his forces up there to fight them rather than being able to concentrate on Gondor. And so it ends up being a positive outcome that people finally figure out that the treasure is really only – it's good – it's best – used when it's distributed and shared, and they help everybody sort of build themselves up and share in the wealth.
But Bilbo had to kind of force the issue by you know giving the Arkenstone basically to what's his name now to Bard.
Yeah,
and then
it's all Bilbo.
Yeah, and
thank
then
God
and
they later, took him along.
He definitely, even though he's, you know, unassuming, small, just like Frodo in a way, he definitely saves the situation here by being generous and by doing the thing that is, you know, kind of by doing the right thing.
That's right. And ultimately, what's kind of funny is that he does it by doing the role that he was brought along to serve, which was as a burglar.
To steal. Steal the Arkenstone. Yeah.
Yeah, he stole the Arkenstone and helped try to avert war and sort of, you know, help everyone realize what sort of the greater priority and value should be. So it's sort of funny because he's not at all a burglar when he starts on this quest. He's like the farthest thing from. And then one of his greatest acts toward the end is to burgle something. But he doesn't do it for himself. He does it totally out of a desire to avert a war. So
It's very, very cool. You'd think that with the important role of Bart Bowman, it makes sense to take an experienced actor. And since mm-hmm. there are probably going to be quite a few scenes between Bilbo and Bart the Bowman, it makes sense to cast Benedict Cumberbatch together with Martin Freeman because they have chemistry and that works well together. So I totally have to watch Sherlock now because now the two of them are in Tolkien. This is going to be compulsory viewing.
Yes, absolutely. You got to get awesome. A feel for their acting and their chemistry. They're really absolutely. Good in Sherlock, and I'm sure whoever Benedict Cumberbatch plays in The Hobbit, they will also be excellent.
That's great. And one final thing. So what happens to Bart the Bowman after the events in The Hobbit? Does he become like the leader of Lake Town? Do we see any, are there any traces of him or his family later on in the history of Middle Earth or perhaps in Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, absolutely. So he does go and rebuild the kingdom of Dale, which sits at the feet of the Lonely Mountain, and he is he becomes king, and he has a great relationship with both the elves and also with the dwarves of the Lonely Mountain.
That's cool.
And Bard the Bowman's the king, and he sort of starts the line of kings in Dale. Bard has a son, I don't know if it's Bane or Bine, who succeeds him. And then at the time of the Lord of the Rings, his Bine's son, Bran, so that's Bard's grandson, is uh-huh. king of
oh,
Dale.
Nice.
And he... allies himself with the dwarves, and there's a right at exactly the same time the Battle of the Pelennor Fields is taking place, which is the major battle in Gondor that we see in the movie and in the book. There's also a battle taking place up in Dale and at the Lonely Mountain between some of Sauron's forces and the men of Dale and the dwarves of the Lonely Mountain. And unfortunately, Bran dies in that war. But there's this very sort of poetic scene that Gandalf describes that Dain, the king mm-hmm. of the Lonely Mountain, who is the cousin of Thorin, that, you know, he becomes yeah. a king. There's a scene where Dain dies in that war also, and he dies while defending the body of King Bran. So I guess Bran has fallen. I'm not sure if he's dead at that mm-hmm. point, but Dain defends Brand and ends up dying trying to defend Brand. And so you get this sort of very poetic scene where Thorin, the sort of the first king of the mountain after the dragon, almost goes to war with Bard over his treasure, and then later on the next king of the mountain, Dain, dies trying to defend Bard's grandson, Brand, in the War of the Rings. And then
awesome.
Bard the Second, the great-grandson of Bard, becomes king of Dale after the War of the Rings. So
very cool.
He gets to enjoy the sort of golden age of no more Sauron.
I love these overarching, family story arcs. That's really, really cool.
Well, it's fun that he connects. He fills out the history of Dale and of the Lonely Mountain in The Lord of the Rings and really connects them too.
Great. More casting news coming up soon. We talk about two major actors that are joining the Hobbit cast, Spider and Rusty. We will talk about that, and we will talk about a huge explosion on the set of The Hobbit. But first, I want to ask some time for our friends over at Bluehost. They are sponsors of this show. Bluehost is as the name kind of implies, it's a hosting company that offers just this awesome, awesome deal where for only $6.95 per month, and that's $6.95 per month, that's like two cups of coffee per month, offers unlimited bandwidth and unlimited storage space for your blog, your website, your forum, whatever you want to create. And what I love particularly about Bluehost are two things, one of which is for that price, you also get your own .com or .net, .org domain name. So you get a free domain name for that. That's included in the prize. So no more, you know, blah, 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 .blogspot.com. No, you have your own .com domain name, which is, I think, very important for the branding of your blog or website or whatever other web initiative you have. And what I love about Bluehost is that they make it so simple to get things going. You know, normally if you rent some space at a hosting company, you basically get an FTP account. They give you your login codes, and then, you know, you just do whatever you want. But for a lot of people, and I'm one of those, it's like, so how do I start? How do I set up a blog? I'm not a technician. I don't know anything about, you know, setting up all this software on a server. What Bluehost does, it's once you sign up, they give you these one-click installations. So, for instance, you want to have a blog, just like we have over at thehobbit.sqpn.com. You can create exactly the same blog by going to your Bluehost account, and then there's this one button that you have to press, and it's like, do you want to install your WordPress account? And it's like a full-fledged, it can even be multi-user WordPress account. Just click here, and there's this one button, and you click on it, you wait a couple of minutes, and then boom, your blog is ready to go, and you can install any theme you want. You can make it as professional as you want. Now, I said that you could create exactly what we have over at thehobbit.sqpn.com. That is actually a theme that we purchased. But again, you know, you can install any professional theme or one of the gazillion free themes that are out there and that are looking awesome. I love Bluehost. I've been working with it for quite a while now. I'm super happy with both the service that they provide and the price. I mean, that for me, I'm Dutch, so I don't like to spend a lot of money. And if I can find a bargain that offers tremendous value for my buck, I always go with it. So Bluehost, highly recommend it. And how do you sign up for that? And you know, the price is so low that you could even try it out for a month or, you know, just a while and see how things go. You can easily migrate your stuff to any other account if you want to. Just do this. Go to thehobbit.sqpn.com, click on the Bluehost banner, and that will give you more information, and it will also allow you to sign up there. Highly recommend it. So thanks to Bluehost for sponsoring this episode of Secrets of the Hobbit. If you want to sponsor a show, an episode, you can do that also by going to our main website, sqpn.com, and in a menu, you will find a link that says sponsor an episode. And you can do that for a very, very low prices, but it's a great way to join the thousands of listeners that we already have to this show. Now, this is a very motivated, dedicated audience. So if you have something to plug, your own blog, you know, a product, a CD, I don't know, perhaps you have your own set of songs about Middle Earth, this is a great opportunity to reach a huge audience out there. So go check that out on sqpn.com. Click on sponsor an episode or sponsor a show, and that will give you all the information you need. Anyway, that was the little break. Let's go back to the important casting news, Dave. I was so excited to read that Spider and Rusty have been cast on The Hobbit. Tell me all about these two fellows. Who are they?
So basically, you know, there's a lot of animals that you need in these movies. A while ago, you'll remember there was Geordi the Billy Goat who had been cast in it.
Yes.
He
was awesome in Superman 2, that goat.
Now a couple of, I guess their cattle have been, they refer to it as the eight strong Battensby Bullock team. So I guess it's a kind of cattle.
Wait a minute. These are animals? I was
yes.
Like, Bullock.
You thought they were people?
I thought they were like cousins of Sandra Bullock. Or, I don't know, perhaps Sandra Bullock herself. No, just kidding.
Well, you know, with names like Spider and Rusty, that's an easy mistake to make.
Yes, of course. So two Bullocks. I mean, this is how desperate we are for news, that we report on everything. Yes. So do we know anything about the roles that they will play?
Not
Which important animal
tell.
Characters? We might see them in the Shire.
There's an interview with the team master, Ross Battensby, and he says, "We are now on an 1,800-acre farm at Gray's Road near Wellington that is leased by the production. I can't say too much about what the Bullocks will be doing, but we are spending 2 weeks in rehearsals for a scene which will be shot in the old General Motors building, apparently."
Really?
I can't even speculate, because the only animals that are mentioned prominently in the book are ponies. They use a lot of ponies and horses, and then birds. There's the thrush, and then there's also the dwarves send messages with ravens. But I don't know anything about goats or cattle. I presume it'll be like just a passing scene where, like, either they're in the Shire, or maybe there are some cattle owned by the Lakemen or something.
But the fact that they are near Wellington, I think that kind of rules out the Shire. Because the Shire, we know that the Shire scenes are going to be filmed at Matamata. I don't think that they're going to just transport these two big animals to Matamata. I mean, they could probably just rent two of those bullocks over there as well. So this might be something that is filmed at Wellington Studios. I don't know. Bjorn's house, perhaps? That's some of the speculation that I saw.
You got it. Yes. Huh. Because he has all kinds of animals.
Right.
And that's a really – I'd forgotten about that, but I paid close attention to that scene when I was listening to parts of the audiobook last week. And he has horses and sheep and cattle and all kinds of animals living with him, and they're basically servants. So, like, when he serves dinner, the animals push in the seats and carry in the plates and serve the food, and it's sort of a bizarre scene.
Well, and the fact that they refer to rehearsals makes sense that they do actually do something, they perform something, that there is an action going on. This is not just a background, two background animals. Like Inge in the chat room is saying, well, there is also, you know, there are these scenes where Smaug is attacking cattle, you know, in the area of the Lonely Mountain. But it wouldn't be interesting to just have to cast two bullocks to just perform a little bit of running around. I think it makes sense that they will serve as Bjorn's servants, and you know, 2 weeks of rehearsals. How would that be? Yeah. That would be so fun to watch those rehearsals. Now I want to go back to that, you know, that previous take. Your was slightly, it was a little bit too, can you do another take on that? Like a bit more lighthearted moo? Like moo? No. Do the other moo. Yeah. Something like that. I don't know. Yeah, there you go. There you go. Now do that again when the cameras are on, and the Peter Jackson will be excited. And of course,
sure,
this is
a great time directing these guys.
And these are the first, I mean, this is another first in I love the way that The Hobbit is breaking new grounds in cinematic history, because these are the, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the first two bullocks to be featured in 3D at 48
That's right.
frames per second. We've seen 2D bullocks in the past. We've seen 24 frames per second bullocks. We've never seen 48 frames per second 3D bullocks. So there you get. There you go again. Peter Jackson is writing history as we speak.
You're on a roll today.
I don't know. Now, there was another cast member who was interviewed about his role in The Lord of the Rings, and it was actually one of the dwarves. And if I'm not mistaken, it was the actor who plays Dory, isn't it?
Right on. Yes, his name is Mark Hadlow. He plays Dory, and there's an article on Stuff New Zealand, just some, you know, news website, and they refer to the title of their article is Spills the Beans, Mark Hadlow Spills the Beans, but he didn't really actually spill. Basically, he just said, yes, hello, I'm Mark Hadlow, and I'm playing Dory, and I can't tell you anything else.
But I will still continue to babble on for a couple of paragraphs.
That's right. I'll tell you a bunch of things, none of which is actually real news. It's just his sort of experience. But he says he was sort of overwhelmed when he first met the so-called celebrity cast members, such as Ian McKellen and Martin Freeman and folks like that. But he said once the camera gets rolling, working with them is not any different than working with anyone else. He talks about how he has to wake up at 4 a.m. each day and spend a couple hours in makeup, getting the prosthetics applied, which we sort of all figure, you know, that's we've seen that before with Lord of the Rings. He says he's living in Wellington for the next 18 months, so it sounds like the main filming is going to be at least that long. Or maybe he has to stay there for pickups later or something.
Probably.
We can presume he's in most of the movies, so they are going to be filming for the next year and a half or so, which is exciting. That gives us more time to manage to plan a trip there. So
absolutely.
Let's see. He talks about the audition process. He said that it took like 2 months, which is intense.
Really?
Yeah. And that's about it. So he's not leaking any secrets or giving away any details.
No, of course. I mean, you have like the sneaky photographers for that to kind of try to sneak onto the set and take photos. Actually, something that he talks about in the article as well, where he says that it's really difficult to keep the media out. There's so much interest for this movie that, and of course, you know, every website, blog, or magazine would just die to have some behind the scenes stuff. You know, some secret photographs from the set, but I guess its security is probably also pretty intense surrounding Wellington Studios and the other sets, and part of the locations where they will be shooting are so remote on the Southern Island that they won't have any problem. You know, you're not going to stumble upon as a photographer for a magazine. You're not going to stumble upon one of these sets because nobody knows where they are going to film. And for the Lord of the Rings, they would often just fly to certain locations by helicopter. That's how remote it used to be. So I wouldn't be surprised that, especially the Lonely Mountain scenes, will be very remote, very far away from the cameras and the reporters. And we wanted to, because we, as much as I like rumors, I also want to have some surprises left for the actual premiere of the movie. So, there's also a lot of the visual aspect of the movie that we will only see once the movie hits the theaters, because it's all, it's computer generated, or it's all done in post production during that stage. So, looks like pretty intense. 18 months, though, you know, if you have to wake up every day at 4 o'clock and being in makeup for 4 hours, golly. I guess the dwarves must have a tougher life than the hobbits, because for a hobbit, it's just basically putting on a wig and the fake ears and then the feet, and that's about it. And then you're done. But with the beards and everything and the noses, I guess the dwarves.
Oh, well. I don't envy them.
No, must be terrible. Although right now filming should be more comfortable than during summertime, because it's kind of cold now in New Zealand, so it's probably not as hot. Although if they're filming all this inside, then that's probably not going to help. The weather is not going to be of any influence because it's all inside. But we know the stories, of course. About filming of The Lord of the Rings, where John Rhys-Davies had these incredible rashes. You know, so much the prosthetics caused incredible allergies, and it was almost unbearable for him to wear the prosthetics. So I hope that they found some solutions to that problem.
So do I.
Because in the Lord, imagine, you know, you want to scratch, something is itching underneath that big beard and you cannot scratch for a day. That would be terrible. That would be so horrible.
That would be awful.
And with the John, is it Rhys-Davies or Rhys-Davies?
John Rhys-Davies.
Rhys-Davies. He said that, you know, some days he would just get ill. That was how bad it was. It was just completely impossible to act, even with the rash and everything.
Well, I really hope they've resolved that, because it'll be really terrible if their main cast, 13 dwarves, are suffering through that every
You got 13 victims instead of one.
Might make production. They don't need any more trials and tribulations with that production.
Of course, it might result in more convincing dwarven roars, you know, if you've been frustrated by all the itching underneath your beard for a whole day. Your Barukalar comes out with much more strength and force. You just want to yell at Peter Jackson.
That's right.
The other day, by the way, talking about dwarven speak, I think it was Inga again who was in the chat room. She came across a clip on YouTube with a song about that Baruch. What is it, Kazad? Or I never know how to pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to find that now. Of course, I can't find a link. I should prepare this. It was very fun. I think the song. It was Baruch Kazat Aimenu. There you go. And I think the song was originally made for the Lord of the Rings game. Although I recognize the melody, but I don't recognize the lyrics from any part in the game. So it might be something that is just recorded.
I know one of my new colleagues at the Middle Earth Network, John D. Bartolo, who does the Lonely Mountain Band, has done a song there's a lot of dwarvish language in that too.
Oh, cool.
It could potentially be the same song. I'm not sure, but I know there's a part where he shouts that.
And he made it up. He made the words up himself because we don't know much about the dwarven language, as we discussed earlier.
What he does is he scours the books for various things, like particularly in Lord of the Rings, you get a lot of Gimli shouting a lot of little clips of dwarvish language when he's going into the battle and sort of so like John I know like grabs a bunch of that stuff and puts it all together. So
it's the Lonely Mountain Band.
Lonely
Mountain Band. I've got a song here of Durin's Awakening, just to give people an idea of what kind of music we're talking about.
Awakening. I think that might be John's, but I don't hold me to that. Yes, it is. That's Lonely Mountain.
Okay,
Band.
Let's listen in.
Song of Awakening. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds like a live performance, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
The world was young, the mountains green, the steam it all must see. The words were laid on stream of stone when Durin walked and walked alone. He named the nameless hills and dells, he drank from yet untasted wells. He stooped and looked in mirror near and saw a crown of stars appear as gems upon a silver thread above the shadow of his head.
So is this a poem from the original book, or?
That's right, yes. It comes from... It's a poem that Gimli recites when they're in Moria.
Oh, cool. I like it, actually. It's just have the original poem from the books and then hearing it with music.
Yep.
That works for me. That works really well.
Yep. Sam also likes the song, just so you know.
Okay.
Sam the Hobbit, after Gimli recites it, Sam's like, oh, I like that. I want to learn it.
So nice.
You're in good company. Good taste.
Very well. And here's the Baruch Kazat Lotro song. Let me see if I can play that real briefly. I'm just going to play a little snippet, of course, because it might be copyrighted. This sounds very, you know, dwarvish, very epic. I like that.
Very threatening. Baruch Kazat Aimenu.
I mean, this sounds really like the dwarven style singing I'm just really hoping that they won't go with the style of singing that we hear in the BBC audio production of The Hobbit, because it's horrible. I mean, that's the part where I always fast forward, because I cannot stand it. But this sounds kind of really dwarvish, like a cub. It, you know, has some punch to it. So I can totally see the dwarf singing like this, but I don't know if there will be any singing. they might have enough music already for the soundtrack, so they won't need the dwarves, but we'll see. I'll have to wait and see. You can hear a lot of the music by the Lonely Mountain Band if you listen to Middle Earth Network Radio, by the way, which is this free to listen to digital radio station that has not only Tolkien-inspired music or fantasy movie music, but it also carries a number of podcasts on the topic of Tolkien, The Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, and I think that we're now also featured, right, on that radio from time to time.
We are indeed. I listen to us every once in a while. I hear us come on.
Oh, really? You listen That's to right. yourself? I can't do that.
I want to double check and make sure I don't sound like a complete idiot.
Well, you don't.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
That's my role. But no, it's a great station, and we are also preparing to get our sister show on there as well, which is Secrets of Middle Earth, and I want to give it a small plug here, because we've just relaunched that show, that series, with our second season, so we're working more on a seasonal base with that, which we do for some of the other Secrets Off shows, where we spend some time producing a number of shows, and then we release it, and then in the meantime, while it's being released, we work on another series. So you might want to check that out as well. MiddleEarth.sqpn.com is the repository for those shows, or you can just tune in to Middle Earth Network Radio, where it will be on soon, I hope. Let's get back to the Hobbit news. There was this weird story, and at first it sounded pretty spectacular, a story about an explosion on the set of The Hobbit, with people being hospitalized, and man, I was like, oh no, it's another curse to the production. The whole Wellington Studios have burned to the ground, and you know, all the cast is now in the hospital, and what happened?
I can't win. May 24th, which is 2 days ago, Tuesday, yeah, I think so, at 11:24 a.m., there was a report of an explosion at Stone Street Studios in Miramar, and it was on the Hobbit set. Two people were treated at the scene and then taken to the hospital by ambulance.
Okay.
And I think that the details are sort of still coming in about what exactly happened. And of course, the Hobbit people are really downplaying it. They're saying, oh, it was just a, you know, it wasn't really an explosion. It was just like a sort of a minor fire. And
yeah, from what I heard.
Yes, they got injured. Their nostril hairs were burned and stuff.
Okay.
So
it's not too bad.
What the Hobbit folks are saying.
Uh-huh. But it happened while they were drilling a hole in a statue? Is that what the original...
Something like that. I can't figure out if there was a sort of a, you know, miniature explosion and it was near where they were drilling the statue, or it happened while the statue itself blew up, or I can't figure out. The details are sort of sketchy about what exactly happened with the fire and explosion. And there wasn't a fire. The Hobbit publicity folks have been very, very careful to say there was not a fire. There was a minor quote unquote explosion, but not really an explosion, just sort of a flare up or something.
But we won't hear any details from the fireman, because apparently they are not allowed to say anything about what's happening inside the studios. And there was a little bit of a controversy about that. It's like, how can you let these firefighters sign a gag order when they're trying to rescue all these poor victims of that explosion? But actually, it turns out that the firefighters that are, you know, on duty for those studios have signed that gag order months ago. And it kind of makes sense because, of course, there's a lot of, you don't want the firefighters to walk onto a set, you know, with their little iPhone camera and just, you know, selling their pictures to magazines for thousands and thousands of what do they have in New Zealand? Is it dollars? I think so, right?
Yes, I think so.
So it makes sense if you are on call for a major production like that, there are some things that you cannot say to the press. If you, even if it's for a drill or something like that, you don't want stuff to leak out. So it's not that the firefighters were rushing onto the scene and then, you know, Peter Jackson was standing there. Oh, wait a second, guys, first read through these 10 pages of legalese and then put your signature there. And then you may proceed at extinguishing the fire. This was done a long time ago. And, you know, the fact that it happened while they were working on a statue actually makes sense to me. So what might have happened, and again, I'm just speculating, but what I can imagine is that these statues, of course, are not made of stone. They're made of styrofoam or, you know, all sorts of or plastics. And then, of course, the paint that is used is all spray painted. So what could have happened is that someone was, I don't know, spray painting, or perhaps that even the friction of, you know, the process of drilling that hole into that statue might have caused a spark or something like that to set fire to the paint. Or I don't know. There are a lot of chemicals involved in the production of these sets. So, and of course, it's all, you know, plywood and everything. So it's easy to start a fire. Or perhaps even the paint itself might have exploded or caught fire if it's spray paint, because it's oil based perhaps, and who knows. So I think it's just one of the things that it can happen in the production of the set. And it's something probably that happens in a lot of productions, but the press has kind of blown this out of proportion, no pun intended. Major explosion rocks the Hobbit set. puts the whole production in jeopardy. People kind of love headlines like that because they know that people will read the story. So anyway. But, of course, we do hope that the people that were hospitalized are, you know, are not in a dangerous situation, and that they will be healed soon of whatever injury they incurred.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, I think part of it is that I think the media likes this narrative about the show being cursed.
Of course,
Like I saw a little sort of speculative article someone wrote. I don't remember where, it's not worth discussing too much. Mm-hmm. But basically, they were saying, at what point should they pull the plug on the production? They're saying, like, you know, oh, you know, at some point along the line, they're just having so many mishaps and so many problems. Maybe they should just pause production or just cancel it. I mean, at what point should we just realize that this whole thing's doomed? And it's like, come on.
The same thing happened during the production of Titanic, where they were talking about the curse of the Titanic, and there were some accidents on the set and some, you know, very similar situation. And the media just strung these events together and came up with this whole mythology of the curse of the Titanic. And, you know, against all odds, James Cameron has been able to finish his movie despite the curse of the Titanic. And this major production might as well have hit another iceberg and blah, blah, blah. They use all this imagery and people love that. But it's all, you know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and I'm sort of willing to believe that this explosion, so-called explosion, was probably a pretty minor thing. So
yeah.
I'm not going to trouble myself too much about it.
No, me neither. So some of the people involved in the production of The Hobbit are still helping out the people of Christchurch that were hit by this major earthquake a couple of months ago. There are still a lot of, you know, financial actions going on, trying to raise money for the victims of that earthquake and to help in the recovery process. And one of the latest things that people involved in the production of The Hobbit did was to auction off an autographed copy of The Hobbit, of the book, that is, not the script. Otherwise, I would have bid on it. But it's just a book. It's just a book. It's, you know, Tolkien's version, not the version by Peter Jackson. And so apparently a lot of actors wrote something, I think, in the, you know, first few pages of the book.
Yep. It's, let's see, what kinds of things did they write? They were writing things. So Richard Armitage, who's playing Thorin, said, "For Christchurch love, Richard A." James Nesbitt's one of the dwarves. He wrote "Best Wishes," James Nesbitt, Beaufort. Graham McTavish wrote "All the Very Best to Christchurch." Sir Ian McKellen sketched a full-page drawing of Gandalf.
Oh, that's cool.
Some long bottom leaf with the message "Love from Middle Earth," Ian McKellen.
Nice.
Christopher Lee signed it. So it's a pretty nice prize. And I think it's up over $1,000 right now.
Wow.
Let's double check the price again.
And people can still continue to bid on this?
Yes, I believe through... Well, let me check. let me make sure before I just say something completely absurdly wrong. Where the heck is this? There it is. It's over at sella.co.nz. It's at, let's see, $1,110. And it looks like it's going through, it closes June 2nd, 2011.
Nice.
So. It's pretty good. And man, in one day on May 26th, I'm looking at the bid history.
Yes.
It went from 200 to 1,000.
Wow. That's awesome. Yep.
May 26th, 10:59 a.m., it's $210. May 26th, 8:05 p.m., so that's 10 hours later, $1,100.
And now, of course, you've got all our thousands of listeners. And I'm not kidding there. We have thousands of listeners already to this show. Might come over and...
50,000.
Yeah, they might have bid on that as well. I mean, I think it's a really cool gift. I mean, it's quite unique to have, especially with the drawing of Gandalf by Sir Ian McKellen.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
That alone, they could auction off that page.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. They should tear that out and auction that separately.
Yeah. Anyway, it's great to see that despite the fact that this is a production about a fantasy movie, these guys are also, you know, rooted in reality and want to help out the people of Christchurch, people in New Zealand, to recover from that that earthquake that struck the area.
Yes.
Right.
They're still grounded
right around
in reality.
The time. Yeah, that's very, very cool to see. I mean, it goes to show that you know, movie makers are people as well, and sometimes, you know, fantasy movies are kind of looked down upon because it's kind of this subgenre. People, you know, it's only promoting escapism. But these people show that we live in this world, and sometimes you can use your fame and your stature as an actor to help out. So that's very cool. By the way, on the topic of this whole bad reputation of fantasy movies and fantasy literature and in a way also video games often, I was listening to this great... I'm re-listening to the recordings of Cory Doctorow, the Tolkien professor, and in one of his first podcasts that is still available online. He talks about that, and he actually, I think, in the episode, kind of defends the necessity of fantasy or the role it plays also to it's kind of this experience during which you can learn about the real world. It's your storytelling is not just for entertainment. It's part of the way in which we convey values and we learn things about our real life just by... specifically by going, you know, just setting our big questions about who we are and what our purpose is in life in a fantasy world. It helps us. It works as a mirror to our own life. I really like that. I need to kind of find that episode where he talks about that. Anyway, that wraps it up, I think, for this episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit. More of our shows are... can be found on our website, which is thehobbit.sqpn.com. And you can also find us on iTunes. Just look for Secrets of the Hobbit. And if you are there, leave us a review or just rate us with a couple of stars. That will really help other people find the show as well. Dave, thanks for joining me today. And we'll be back soon with another episode of Secrets of the Hobbit. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.